Greetings, troublemakers. Welcome to Trouble. My name is not important. In the year of 1990, my community, the Mohawks of Ganasadaga, began to fight the construction of a golf course that would have destroyed one of our sacred burial grounds. We filed petitions, we protested, and finally we took up arms against the Quebec police and eventually the Canadian Army to protect our land. After a 78-day standoff, we often won. And the cemetery and the surrounding pines that would have been cleared and used by rich men to play golf on are still there today. Fast forward to 26 years later, the Lakota community of Standing Rock faced off with oil infrastructure company Energy Transfer Partners against their attempt to build the Dakota Access Pipeline, or DAPL, through their territory and under the Missouri River. A pipeline, they say, if built, will most certainly rupture and contaminate the water of millions of people in the United States. The fight against DAPL became the stuff of legend. Thousands of indigenous and settler allies converged in North Dakota to stop this project against incredible odds. They became known as water protectors, and in November of 2016, they had a temporary victory when outgoing President Barack Obama denied a permit for a key part of the construction. For some, this executive action seemed to validate a particular strategy and corresponding set of tactics. But history has clearly shown that states have never had any qualms breaking the countless promises they made to indigenous peoples. As for those who've forgotten or neglected this fact, Donald Trump wasted no time in reminding them. At the same time, there were many water protectors who saw this political maneuver as a dirty trick it was, and who continued to stress the need for a strategy based on physical confrontation and direct action. During the next 30 minutes, we'll bring you the voices of some of these individuals as they relate their experiences fighting the black snake and making a whole lot of trouble.
It's hard to just even use the English word warrior when you're talking about what it means to be a warrior. Because as Indigenous people, we were born into this life and we believe that it's our duty and responsibility to defend our land, in which our language, our culture, our existence flows from. There's no separating us from our land. It's a spiritual connection that goes deep since the beginning of our people. So as a warrior, we are a defender, we are a protector, and as a warrior, we would do and by any means protect and defend our people and anything that comes in the way of that. And here we're talking about the contamination of water that so much people depend on. I've been down here since the middle of September, and here to be in solidarity with people that are fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Started, there was like a handful of people there for a long time. But once these guys actually came here and really started building and destroying the earth, so everyone just started coming here faster, and every day it was just growing and growing. Before you know it, that sacred stone camp was just overflowing.
I came out here in response to a call for medical support.
We received an invite from some of the matriarchs and indigenous leadership from this Lakota, Dakota, Nakota territory to come help fight the black snake, help fight the pipeline. In some matriarchs' opinions, by any means necessary, and the spirit of collective resistance and use a diversity of tactics to do that.
There's hundreds of camps in this bigger Standing Rock encampment that's called the Ochepisikoan camp. It got up to around 20,000 people, but a lot of the people that are here and have maintained camps here. There's High Star Camp, there's Wild Oglala's camp. So this is a big, massive mobilization. There's a lot of people here, and they want to stop a pipeline.
Went from just a few of us in little small groups going out and shutting down the pipeline wherever we could, you know, like multiple sites a day, everything. We were just on it.
Black Snake Killers!
Black Snake Killers!
My folks said if we're really gonna fight the system, they will put the bottle down and get to fighting with us. And I believe in every one of them the same, that if we really got to fighting, every one of them would bang with us. so. I pray they see who they really are, though. Beautiful out here gripping on a fully auto. Full throttle, never sell out to the fucking system. Stand up right now, I pray you coming with us.
All right, now from here, on three, we're gonna move. One, two, three.
Move, move, move.
Diversity of tactics is a turn of phrase that represents the very real fact that for every one person on the front line who's there, who can stand and catch rubber bullets, there are many folks behind them, be those folks medics, be those folks logistics personnel, be those the folks in the kitchen who fed them that day.
I believe that the only way that anyone could organize is the diversity of tactics, because we're all so diverse people. Like, where else could you get, you know, thousands of people all to come together like that and form this community, and actually people are not, you know, like killing each other. You know, look at the rest of society.
We need all the things. We need people litigating in court, we need people doing quote-unquote petitions, we need people praying, and also people that are doing direct action.
A lot of people did a lot of different things, went to courthouse, went to the state capitol, locking down on the machinery and actually physically stopping the construction and the machines for the day. Had massive caravans out to just make a presence and stop the construction.
Stopping it everywhere we could, any way we could, using our bodies, locking down, just showing up in force and scaring the workers off.
Just the pure presence of 400 water protectors and native people would shut Doppel down for the day. And sometimes they would actually be running to their trucks because they know what they're doing is wrong. Like, I would be scared too.
At one point, lockdowns are really effective. They could stop construction. They could stop what was happening for the day on like prospective work sites. But then I got to the point where it was so militarized and the resources that we were up against, it didn't matter that we had the intention to like go and lock down to something. It just wasn't an option. So then people have to like reevaluate the situation, ask themselves what it means to be effective, look at the violence that's being perpetrated on them, and then collectively come back together and decide what tactics you're going to use. And then people started seeing things like flaming cars on highways and what have you, because a lot of the times that sacred fire was the only thing protecting people from the crazy cops and military from coming in and wrecking shop.
The climax of everything that I witnessed when I was here was when the police took the frontline camp. People sacrificed vehicles that day to blockade.
What does that mean, sacrificed vehicles?
Lit up.
Were it not for people who had been training for these sorts of nonviolent civil disobedience, confrontational situation, that pipe would have been built by now.
Looking for trouble?
Success in stopping a pipeline or other major infrastructure project depends on a number of factors. And despite what lots of people want to believe, Facebook likes aren't one of them. A strong heart, patience, and determination on the part of land defenders are all crucial, but timing and proper planning are also key. It's important to get out in front of the pipeline, both physically and by knowing when and where to make your stand. On the west coast of Turtle Island, in the unceded territories of the Wet'suwet'en Nation in so-called British Columbia, warriors and tribal elders from the Unist'ot'en clan have been blocking the construction of multiple pipelines through their territories for 7 years now. This anchor of land defense has been the Unist'ot'en camp, a resistance community constructed smack dab in the pipeline's proposed path. Similar in some ways to Osseti Sakowin, also known as Sacred Stone Camp, that has served as the home base for water protectors fighting to block the Dakota Access Pipeline. Here's camp spokesperson Frida Hewson kicking the cops out of her territory.
Okay. People don't just freely walk in.
So
because we're blocking pipelines out, we're not blocking everybody out.
I'm not a pipeline.
And here she is again, kicking out pipeline workers who illegally choppered in to do survey work.
Is there a problem why you're not leaving?
And here she is denying access to Chevron executives who had the audacity to offer her corporate bottled water and industrial tobacco.
We're here today to talk to you about doing work on your land, and we're requesting access onto your territory.
We've already said no to these projects and that no pipelines will come on our territory.
In November of 2016, Canada's walking photo op of a Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, signed an order killing the Northern Gateway pipeline, one of the pipelines that had been slated to cross paths with the Unistoten. But at the same news conference where he signed Northern Gateway's death certificate, Trudeau announced the approval of two other pipelines, including Enbridge's Line 3 and Kinder Morgan's Trans Mountain, which is expected to face serious resistance in the months and years to come. In addition to logistical considerations, those seeking to block pipelines need to be prepared to deal with internal dynamics and for the potential for disagreements over tactics to sow further discord and disunity.
Here you have hundreds of different people and hundreds of different tribes that are coming together. People that have many different views on how we're going to fight this pipeline. People believe that the only way we're going to fight this pipeline is that we face off and we fight direct head on. Some people think the best way is the legal route. Some people feel that, you know, prayer is the most powerful thing, and that's the only way that we're going to beat this. But as Indigenous people, we have to understand that we come from respect. You know, that's who we are as Indigenous people, and respecting the way that people believe.
There's been a group ever since we got here, you know, that wanted some of us out of here. But we're still here, you know, we didn't want to go, we weren't going to go nowhere because we know nothing was going to happen if we left. There was a lot of fighting that went on too because they didn't want to camp doing actions no more. They didn't understand, really, they didn't understand direct action, so they just didn't want it, you know, the whole tribe and all the everybody.
There's been a lot of issues with peace police and how people have been fighting the struggle, even when it's been just lockdowns.
The peace police, both here in treaty territory, much as I've seen them over the years in urban settings and demonstrations, are folks who tend to, for one reason or another, feel that their concern for other people's safety trump any good tactics or any of those individuals who may be putting themselves knowingly in harm's way, trumps their opinions that they have made to choose to be in harm's way.
Who are the peace police? It's a combination of people that are closely affiliated with the tribe, people that have like monetary interests in different NGOs. So even some people that came here that like threw down in Ferguson and Baltimore that were part of those struggles have come here and have felt relatively immobilized because they've tried to be good comrades and deferring to Indigenous leadership, but there's such a struggle between different groups as to like who is Indigenous leadership and what it means to be here in a good way and what it means to resist in a way that's beneficial to the local community.
There was this group of people that came in, they were just all about peace, and they were bringing real spiritual items and trying to use them against the people, and it caused a lot of confusion and fear and I don't know, anger.
Take my badge away.
Back up.
Some of our own people that were policing our own people, telling our own warriors and water protectors that we're taking direct action to go back to camp.
You can't both ask people to come and fight and use civil disobedience and nonviolent direct action tactics, and similarly lose your spine for those tactics when people start getting injured or the police start responding with the sorts of violence that we train folks to expect. When we instead tell folks that this will be accomplished through the courts or this will be accomplished through prayer, why were so many people asked to come to be physically present? These peace police have time and time again scuttled and interfered with actions that were well under the momentum to be successful, and they were hampered.
If there's one good thing you can say about Nazis, is you know that they are your enemy. No doubt about it. You see one of those racist idiots walking down the street, giving an interview with a reporter, you just want to punch him in the head. Ouch. But within movements of liberation, there are actors within our ranks that claim to be our allies, but who are really not. Putting aside police infiltrators and informants who pose a real threat, we'd like to talk to you about non-governmental organizations, or NGOs. NGOs have a sordid history of infiltrating, pacifying, and co-opting movements. Now, not all NGOs engage in these practices, and some actually do good work. But in recent memory, we've seen far too many examples of environmental NGOs royally screwing over indigenous folks engaged in land defense. Take the battle for the Great Bear Rainforest in Western Canada, where Greenpeace and Forest Ethics joined the Indigenous Grassroots Forest Protectors, later to sideline them and negotiate with logging companies to save a fraction of one of the most important temperate rainforests left in the world. What the logging companies got in return was a promise that environmental NGOs would not protest or oppose logging in Western Canada. This deal became a template for an even bigger betrayal. At stake this time was the Canadian Boreal Forests, one of the largest continuous forests in the world. This time, Greenpeace and Forest Ethics teamed up with the Canadian Forest Products Association, i.e. the logging industry, for a similar deal. Once again, Indigenous communities who have land in the boreal forest were not consulted, and NGOs promised not only to stop anti-logging campaigns in the boreal forest, but also to defend the industry.
One interesting piece of the agreement is with Greenpeace, David Suzuki, Forest Ethics, Canadian Parks and Wilderness on our side. When someone else comes and tries to bully us, the agreement actually requires that they come and work with us in repelling the attack, and we'll be able to say, fight me, fight my gang.
The latest deal of this type was signed between NGOs like Forest Ethics and Alberta's tar sands industry. Given the public backlash of the previous two agreements, this one was done behind closed doors, so we don't know all the details. What we do know is that oil companies agreed to place limits in tar sands extraction in exchange for the enviros backing down under opposition to pipeline construction. We now turn our attention to another movement enemy hidden in plain sight. That is the federally funded tribal governments that rule over and police indigenous communities. In the US, the so-called sovereign tribes govern federal government assigned pieces of land called reservations or reserves in the case of Canada. Their leaders are members of the community and are chosen through elections and have little or nothing to do with traditional governing structures of indigenous communities they oversee. Historically, although there are some exceptions, tribal government officials are more likely to cut deals with mining, logging, and other extractive industries to exploit traditional territory of indigenous nations they belong to. This is land outside the reservation and land in which they have no jurisdiction. Both in the US and Canada, tribal councils have their own police forces. Let's not forget that Indian police killed Chief Sitting Bull at the Standing Rock Reservation, and in my community of Ganasdage, Mohawk police shot and severely crippled Oka Crisis veteran Joe David. He later passed away from those injuries. Today we see the same thing happening in Standing Rock. Just this month, Bureau of Indian Affairs cops brutally beat a water protector fighting to stop DAPL in their campaign to clear out the last remaining people out of the protest camps. You a mother
of yourself. I believe, and it is my belief, that any type of DIA or like Department of Indian Affairs or Bureau of Indian Affairs, you know, tribal government or elected chief and council that receives federal funding from the federal government, that pays their bills, that pays, gives them the paycheck, has any right within a people's movement. Because we've seen it time and time again, them be co-opted, and it's not the true voice of the people. And we're dealing with this back home with our fight against the Kinder Morgan pipeline. And I see us as Indigenous people battling this, with this straight across the whole hemisphere, where there are Native people that side with the corporate interests. And it really does damage to our people and to our movements. And a lot of times our people fear exposing the corruption within tribal government or even take this tribal government as their own government, when that was invented by the American and Canadian state to continue to control the people.
As discussions about the Dakota Access Pipeline continue, Standing Rock Tribal Council will take all the support they can get, provided they abide by the rules of peaceful protest.
Folks who overly fetishize Native peoples and populations on Turtle Island but don't have a real understanding of the reservation system, or that these reservations used to be prisoner of war camps, they think the tribal council is part and parcel with the traditional leadership, which is only played into when you see tribal council members wearing full war bonnets when they've not done anything that the traditional mandate to get such a sacred item would dictate. And so you have this real kind of constant simmering conflict between these more traditional Native folks and these IRA governments, who you even see it in much of the mainstream media, who talk about Chairman Dave Archambault and don't talk about the International Youth Council or the Youth Runners or LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, who was their spark that started the first sacred fire over at Sacred Stone.
There's been a lot of self-proclaimed elders that are men, that are not all from this community or are not like deferring to the matriarchs in this community that are supposed to have power. And that has created conflict and divide when we don't need it, which is exactly what the Gov wants and what COINTELPRO and shit like that does.
As a friend kind of put it as the question of the year around here is which elder? Because you always have these instances of people coming and saying they're speaking on the authority of the elders or a elder, but oftentimes they don't know the name of that elder. And so you can't help but wonder how good of a way they're operating in if they're coming and barking orders, but they don't really know where those orders originated from.
The chiefs told us to go around asking people to meet
there's
up
no
there.
Chiefs
there's
no here. Chiefs. There are no chiefs.
There's no chiefs.
No, nobody's listening right now. The elders asked you guys to go back to camp.
See, what people always do, they try to split everybody up.
You see it clearly, the players that come in to be able to co-opt. And we have to be able to pinpoint that and to be able to address it in a way that's going to expose it, but also eliminate it from happening again.
What we need to do is we have to be proud of what we did. We have to be honored by the victory, and it's time now. It's time to go home.
There's a lot of different ideas and a lot of discussion around why Dave Archambault asked people to go home. One of the things is someone said that the tribe could be held liable if he didn't publicly say this, but this land is what they call 1851 treaty land. This land that the government calls Army Corps lands is out of the jurisdiction of the reservation, so it's supposedly out of the jurisdiction of Dave Archambault and the tribal chairman.
This one pipeline where people refuse to leave, this is not going to be detrimental to our nation.
He's a politician. That's what it is. Like, is that who people defer to in the community here? Is like the end all be all? No. People defer to like matriarchs from the community or like their elders from their tribes that they're representing that have been like invited to be here. Does that make people leave? Obviously not. So obviously the people that are left here think it's bullish or they would have left.
Despite all our best efforts, sometimes pipelines still get built. The U.S. alone contains over 2.5 million miles of oil and natural gas pipelines. That's enough pipe to encircle Earth more than 100 times. Thankfully, there are a number of ways to stop the flows of existing pipelines for those who know what they're doing. Last year, Enbridge's Line 9 pipeline was shut down 3 times by troublemakers who broke into Enbridge's stations and shut down manual valves. This happened once in so-called Quebec and twice in so-called Ontario. Activists used a similar tactic to simultaneously shut down 5 tar sands pipelines coming into the U.S. in a coordinated action carried out in solidarity with water defenders in Standing Rock. Since they cover huge tracts of land, pipelines are extremely vulnerable to sabotage. Between 2008 and 2009, Encana pipelines in and around the towns of Dawson Creek and Tom's Lake in so-called BC were targeted by a series of bombings. Earlier this year, someone used heavy machinery to dig up a section of pipe in so-called Alberta, causing about $500,000 in damage. Oil infrastructure has also been a choice target for armed rebel groups such as the ELN and the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, or MEND, in Nigeria. Of course, when taking action against existing pipeline infrastructure, it's incredibly important that people know what they're doing and are fully aware of the risks involved. States go to extreme lengths to criminalize people they catch messing with the flows of crude and natural gas, and will try to deter activists with the threat of extremely long prison sentences. And it should be obvious, but it's worth stressing, that the whole point of shutting oil pipelines is to avoid environmental damage. So it's vitally important that anyone carrying out these type of actions take all the necessary precautions to ensure that they don't accidentally end up causing a leak or spills themselves. That said, we're in for a long fight with high stakes. What looks like a defeat can also be a chance to regroup, reflect on how things went down, and figure out how to adapt our strategies and tactics as necessary.
What I learned from here is that going home and working with our community and nation, we really have to set out some type of template or way to organize that's going to respect the whole range of diversity of tactics. And I believe that it's going to take education, and you know, it's going to have to take leading by example, because we can't have history repeat itself.
There's just regrouping that needs to happen, recollectivizing, and the biggest part that comes back to like what we've been talking about is trying to get either the peace police out of here or have them be accountable for their actions so that they can see that what they're doing is really negative to the struggle as a whole, and that it's negative to community building, and that they're not protecting the community, they're endangering the community. They think they're protecting the community from like the cops and the military like coming in, but the fact is they're already here. They're gonna build this thing. It'll eventually break, rupture, what have you, and then it will hurt and destroy the community more. So like regardless of like what interconflicts that may or may not be happening in camp, or that the people on the other team, the cops and the police are creating, if we can remember that what they're doing is gonna cause more harm than anything, it can help us make better decisions as a radical resistance, and it can also help us understand like what kind of help to ask for, and if we don't need help, like where to send other people so that they can be more effective, so that more of these encampments can keep popping up in other places in the United States, because that's the idea. Like, this happened here, why can't it happen somewhere else?
The skill sets that were brought in by folks who had been training to fight pipelines was crucial. I mean, many of these coming fights, we're gonna see communities who are standing up as they get fed up with how the oil companies and gas companies and mining companies treat them, but they don't have the skill sets with them to necessarily bring a solid resistance to those things. While these legal machinations are going on, while the public comments are going on, and we can't continue to have faith that the process will work because the process is rigged. We must go in tandem, and we can hope and we can pray that the easier paper route will get a project stopped, but we also need to prepare ourselves and prepare our youth in the tactics that they'll need to successfully fight these pipelines, rather than when all the paper fight is done, all the public comments is done, and the thing gets approved. That's not the time to start bringing people in to get trained. That's the time when you gotta start your attack.
We have to completely look at ourselves as our whole life is dedicated to the movement, to spark this whole revolution so we can fight for our freedom, so we could fight and have what we're fighting for, our land, our water, our territory, so we could live where we want, hunt where we want, swim where we want, like our ancestors before white men came. That's why we're here.
I watched Troubled. We gotta stop it.
On January 24th, Donald Trump signed an executive presidential order approving the remaining construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. With the same stroke of the pen, he also gave the go-ahead to the Keystone XL Pipeline, which had been shelved by the Obama administration in 2015, following a multi-year fight by anti-pipeline activists and environmental groups. On Thursday, February 22nd, an army of state and county police, flanked by members of the National Guard and Department of Homeland Security, cleared out the last remaining pockets of resistance at the Osetis Aquin camp, bringing a bitter end to the No Doppel encampment. As we enter into a new phase of struggle against ramped up fossil fuel production and even more unrestrained militarization of policing, the dynamics that played out at Sacred Stone Camp can provide valuable lessons moving forward. These are lessons that our movements must learn and properly internalize in order to better prepare us for the battles yet to come. With that said, I hope you enjoyed this first episode of Trouble. Stay tuned for more to come. These short films are intended to be watched in groups and to be used as a resource to promote discussion and collective organizing. Interested in running screenings in your area? Become a troublemaker. For $10 a month, we'll hook you up with an advanced copy of the show and a screening kit featuring additional resources and some questions you can use to get a discussion going. If you can't afford to support us financially, no worries. You can stream and or download all of our content for free off our website, sub.media/trouble. If you got any suggestions for show topics or just want to get in touch, drop us a line at trouble@submedia.tv. We produced this documentary with the generous assistance of the West Coast Women's Warrior Media Cooperative and Mutual Aid Media. Now, get out there and make some trouble. Always trying to make us weaker. Conservative laws criminalizing all our people, poisoning our water, might as well be drinking diesel. They may never know what it means.